You are listening to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly discussion of the precious metals markets and the markets closely associated with the metals. I'm Tori, alongside Miles and Rob, and together we have over 75 years of experience advising on and brokering the precious metals. Each week, the three of us provide a technical analysis of the metals charts, and we'll cover the underlying fundamentals as well as the news that helps move and predict the markets. So today we're going to get into the month-end and year-to-date numbers on the precious metals, as well as the U.S. dollar, the bond markets, tariff and trade dynamics, and Washington economic policies. A lot to cover, you guys. So without further ado, give us a recap of the week, Miles.
For those of you listening at home, we record on Wednesday afternoon, so we're looking the midweek to midweek recap here at the market, starting off with gold. From last week, we're looking up about 3.5%, with gold just refusing to take a breather and still sitting in the high 3,300, currently around $3,378 an ounce. Not too far behind it is silver, the sister metal to gold, up 3.8% from our recording last week, sitting right at about $34.50 an ounce. A couple other white metals we like to take a look at. Platinum up about 1% on the week, sitting just under 1,100. It's about 1,080 and change. But we did have a pretty big range in platinum this week, moving up and down as much as 5%. So relatively volatile week in the white metals, silver included, that we're going to look a little bit deeper at here in a minute. A sister metal to platinum is palladium, up about 3%. And while they had been trading neck and neck for a while, currently sitting a little bit below $1,997 per ounce. Now, flipping over and taking a quick snapshot at the paper markets, starting with the S&P. The S&P is up about 0.5%, currently sitting at 5,970 and sitting right at the bottom of a very key range at the top of the S&P chart. Right behind that, though, is the Dow. And I did think it was worth taking a look at the Dow this week, which is also up about 0.5%, sitting at about 42,400. But on a grander scale, we're definitely starting to see a disconnect between some of the different major market indicators like the S&P versus the Dow, as the Dow is definitely lagging behind the S&P over the last couple of months. And we're not quite seeing the rebound there. And even worse still, looking over at the transportation average, the Dow Jones Transports sitting pretty even on the past week, but still has quite a ways to go to catch up with some of the rebound that the S&P has done and even the Dow has done, the industrials for the Dow. So the equities markets are definitely starting to potentially see some topping action. And finally, to round out this week's charts, everything revolves around the great and wonderful U.S. dollar, which is actually down about 1.5% over the last week and did push back below that all-important 100 figure. It's currently sitting at 98.8. So there's your little brief weekly recap, boys. Where do we want to start this week?
Well, I want to point out the fact that the S&P was up 6.15% in May, and that's the biggest monthly percentage gain since 1990. So we've had quite the rally in the equities markets. It's not like gold has left everything in the dust. There's a little bit more of exuberance, but the NASDAQ outdid that, up 9.56% in May, which is its best percentage monthly gain since 1997 as well. So you guys, those are some huge market moves. Now, remember, a lot of that follows that post-tariff correction that we saw, March, April volatility. Rob, in terms of anything weekly summary, monthly summary, year to date, we like to turn to Rob as the color commentator and the wise old sage, because more than half of those 75 years of our experience comes from Rob. So,
well, and all of those 75 years worth of experience are here at McIlvenny Precious Metals. It's not like we've bounced around this industry for decades. But when we look at the overall trajectory, bonds are headed down. The dollar is definitely in a downtrend. Gold and silver are both moving up. Stocks are at an inflection point right now. They could break either way, but the old saying, sell in May and go away, really holds true for the equities markets. I think you'll expect to see them soften. But people who look at gold, which is one of our primary focuses, I've always been annoyed by this idea that people who buy gold either out of fear or greed. And I think that's a red herring. To me, the reason why people buy gold is because they're losing faith. And now with the fact that this big, beautiful bill that President Trump is so happy about continues the spending, the deficits, the crazy
largesse
from our government. There's no real change in direction. And that is bringing the retail customer back to the table because they are really disappointed that even the Congress refuses to vote into law the executive orders from the president and from DOGE. They refuse to even bring a vote to the House floor.
And this week, Miles, a lot of what you reported on gold and silver being up 3.5%, silver up 3.8% this week, almost all of that occurred on Monday, June 2nd, two days ago, right?
Yep, so, right.
And that was a geopolitical strain in part, the Russia-Ukrainian conflict, obviously getting ramped up with the drone attack.
Yeah, well, those Russian bombers were parked outside for satellite surveillance. That goes back decades to the SALT Treaty. Just like our nuclear bombers have to be parked outside so everybody can see where they are. So my biggest concern is who told the Ukraine military where those bombers were and how to get to them.
Probably Reddit.
Yeah. Anymore, there's probably not a whole lot of secrecy out there with the world of internet.
But jokes aside, there's always the question of like who else might be involved in something
The geopolitical strains can certainly increase as a result. If the news comes out that we had anything to do with it leaking that information to Ukraine.
Or the Europeans. Or the Europeans. NATO in general. Conflict. Yeah, this is a real thing. You know, you have the seasonal aspect of gold softening by July. You have the technical aspect, the 200-day moving average coinciding with the 618 Fibonacci come July. That's tailor-made for a softer gold price, say another 9 or 10% from where we are now. But then you have this saber rattling going on in the Middle East and in Europe, and it doesn't look like that's going to end in a good place.
Yeah, we'll refer the listener to last week's show for that because, Miles, you came up with just a beautiful chart where all of those technical analysis points were aligning for around a $3,000 target for gold. And that would be completely normal and not an interruption of the bull market. But let's recap the month as well because we're at the end of a month and then we'll bring year to date. Just in terms of what we saw in May, gold was absolutely flat. You know, depending on the spot price that you watch, futures market versus LBMA versus the NYMEX, gold was either down 0.2% or up 0.07%. So it was as flat as flat can be. And silver was up 1% in May. And it's that move towards $35 that I know, Miles, you're chomping at the bit to get into. But platinum was up 9% for the month of May. And that's boosted its performance above and beyond silver's for the year-to-date numbers. So the last monthly number is palladium. Palladium up 2.5% in May. Now, we would take those numbers every month in those white metals. It's been a really interesting transition where gold took a breather or a little bit of a rest and the white metals played catch-up. But year-to-date, gold's still leading. Gold is up 28.5% in 2025. Silver's up 19.5%. Platinum up 20.5%. And palladium is only up 9.5%. I mean, halfway through the year, who wouldn't be excited with a 9.5% return on anything? But this isn't just a U.S. dollar phenomenon. I mean, the gold price up 28.5%, it's the most in the U.S. dollar. But if you look at this image here, we're showing an image of various developed market currencies, and gold is up anywhere from roughly 10% to 25% in every global currency. The debt issue, the quantitative easing, the money printing, the inflating your way out of it, it's a global problem.
Total global debt is over $324 trillion, which is about 335% of global GDP. Even our administration is talking about trying to grow the economy and stimulate tax revenue, and that's how they're going to offset the deficit. So we know where we're going. They're trying to stimulate fiscally and economically and hope they can inflate their way out of this problem. We're only seeing the beginning of the rise for precious metals.
You know, what's kind of ironic about that too, Rob, is some old gray-haired Irishman once said to me
I know one of them.
Yeah, we know one of them.
I'm looking at one.
I wrote this down months ago because I thought this was great, and I've heard you say this a few times. To the degree people have lost faith in the system, they will allocate towards gold. So we're looking at how gold has reacted pretty much across the board globally. We're looking at gold making a 60, 70% run in a 13, 14 month period that we're seeing an incredibly weak decline step backwards, following two pretty significant steps forward. This to me is an issue of do what we say, not what we do, because who's buying gold right now?
I was just going to go there. Who is it? Is it coming from the bottom up or the top down?
It's coming from the top down. This is sovereign nations, sovereign banks, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs. This is countries and big boy players that have been building up their gold supply over the last couple of months while simultaneously presenting us with not even choosing to vote on something like some of the Doge cuts. So not only are we not looking at cutting of any fiscal or federal overspending, but we've got a big, beautiful bill that's trying to get passed right now that's going to significantly increase the debt. So this is becoming an issue of do what we say, not what we do, as the same governments are increasing their gold holdings right now while telling us everything's going to be fine and we're just going to inflate your life savings away.
Yeah, that is the problem. This is a continuation of what's gotten us here. We're in the middle of gold shining moment, if you will, and it's been decades in the making. And Don McIlvaney, our founder, has spoken and written about times such as these for decades. He started this company in 1972, and we've been operating ever since. And unfortunately, the things that were predicted are playing out now, and it doesn't mean that we're at the tail end of it. We have a ways to go here where the dollar depreciation has been 75% in terms of its purchasing power just in the last 10 years. That's formally. I would argue that's actually 100% in a sense. Well, you could say 99% that prices have doubled in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And so, of course, gold has doubled. That's what it does, is it makes you immune to that depreciation of the currency that you're saving in. So you save in gold. I helped a client just yesterday who bought gold 10 years ago. It's doubled. He got out. He needed some capital expenditure for his company. And lo and behold, it was the ideal savings for him. But unfortunately, this big, beautiful bill just perpetuates the problem. It's going to raise the debt ceiling by $4 trillion. It is going to increase the national debt by a minimum of $3 trillion in terms of the net effect, and that's without the interest tacked on. With interest, the Congressional Budget Office thinks it's more north of $5 trillion just from this bill that's going to be added. And our national debt is now at $37 trillion. And you think, what does that even mean? I mean, we can't even keep track of what that means. Well, that means about $107,000 per citizen and about $323,000 per taxpayer. That's insurmountable. You can't expect for that to come out of our pockets. So something's going to happen. And Jamie Dimon mentioned that this week, that it's going to be the bond market that tells the story.
Bonds are in big trouble.
Yep.
Gold is telling you. If you think you're safe in the bond market, you need to call us.
No, that's exactly right. And that tends to be a risk-off asset.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, always. You know, it's always the safety hedge, and equities are always the growth hedge.
Well, weren't derivatives in real estate supposed to be a risk-off asset about 15 years ago, too?
That's right. That's right. We're going to be just in the blink of an eye looking here at something. I mean, Jamie Dimon did say that. He said it's going to crack, and he said, and you're going to panic. He goes, we're not going to panic. We're going to make a lot of money on it. Mm-hmm. And they will. JP Morgan will be positioned accordingly. It reminds me of when all the news came out a decade later after the financial crisis that Bernanke and Paulson, those guys all knew what was coming for over a year.
Yeah.
And so they were petitioning Congress for rewrites of laws and everything else to better position themselves protectively. And you know that there was some absolute profit taking as a result of being in the know in advance. But this bond market is the biggest issue that gold is the only protection from.
And the bond market is the biggest financial asset in the country.
The biggest. And it's the biggest in the world. So you're seeing this acceleration of alternative store of value or reserve asset being gold. So the world is moving out of U.S. treasuries into gold. And part of the big, beautiful bill is Section 899, which really it kind of legally weaponizes the U.S. capital markets against the rest of the world because it disincentivizes foreign holdings of U.S. assets. And the reason that they want to do that is they don't want people parking in just the U.S. assets and sitting there, because that strengthens the dollar. Mm-hmm. And so, Miles, I think it's important that we get back to some charts. And for those of you who are listening and not watching, we would refer you to our website, McIlvaney.com, where you can see Golden Rule Radio through the YouTube connection and see these images that we bring up. But they're trying to disincentivize holding of U.S. assets, including treasuries, because they need to weaken the dollar and help revitalize manufacturing in the U.S. So, Miles, let's transition to the dollar, and then I want to come back to any support levels that you're seeing from a gold and silver standpoint, a little deeper dive.
One of the things we always like to do, and Rob, you hinted at this a minute ago, there's a combination you can get from the technical day-to-day action and the ebbs and flows of how people reacting in a market move. Couple that with how the world changes seasonally on an annual basis, mm-hmm. and then the big economic geopolitical events that end up kind of shaping trends on a long enough timeline. But the beautiful thing for me, and the reason why I like going back to the picture book, is A, I'm illiterate, and so I like pictures, and B, I've always liked charts because they give us a snapshot of what are people actually voting with their dollar on. And we can go and see, well, are people voting on a dollar right now? We've been covering this for a great number of months here, just the growth that we saw in the dollar index on the anticipation and finally the increase in interest rates going back over the last couple of years, as we saw the dollar index give us a very strong rise up. Now, no sitting president in our modern credit-driven economy wants a strong currency. This is the race to the bottom that you guys have been talking about. So what we're now trying to do is we've got this fist fight between the Fed Reserve needing to offer those bonds in order to keep floating the debt and floating the value of the currency out into the future. They need to keep raising interest rates or at least offering those bonds at higher and higher rates. Well, we've got a president on the other side who obviously wants to push interest rates down to the floor and tank the dollar again because it's good for short-term trade at a long-term expense. So because of all that, I want to give the dollar a little bit of credit here that we've been sort of parked in this dollar index level sitting and flirting with and bouncing up and down around 100 because I like currency stability. I don't want to see the currency get stronger. I don't want to see it get weaker because that starts bringing in those two things that all investors should avoid that you mentioned a second ago, Rob, fear and greed. Those are terrible motivators.
It is. And I just want to point out, you'll remember me saying, hey, as long as we're cutting spending and getting a grip on our fiscal nightmare, I thought the dollar would remain strong. I thought the dollar was going to be okay. I thought the big kids were in charge and the adults were in the room and they were going to kind of level everything off and the dollar looked pretty good. But now that Congress is refusing to even go there and take care of business like we had been promised, I think people are becoming really frustrated.
Well, if you guys had a stable dollar, what would the Federal Reserve do? Aren't you sensitive to their... But I'll argue this, though. The inflation-adjusted dollar index, we've got to show that because it goes to what you're both saying, and that is, yes, our dollar has lost purchasing power. We talked about that. Everybody feels it on Main Street. However, it's a global phenomenon, like we said, and the inflation-adjusted dollar index actually is trading about 20% over the average. So it shows that on the world scene, the dollar is too strong, and that's what's irking this administration, is that it's giving an export disadvantage.
It is.
And it's obviously suppressing domestic manufacturing and this industrial revolution they want. But we're at the second highest level of dollar index strength
ever.
The highest was, what, 1984?
83, 84. Well, where were interest rates back then?
Oh, that's a great point.
A lot higher.
Because if we had 8, 10, 12, 14% interest rates right now, that inflation-adjusted dollar index would be significantly higher than the early 80s numbers.
So in terms of this price action that we've seen this week with gold to silver, one of the things that we follow very closely is the gold to silver ratio.
Still hovering just under 100 to 1. There's still time for people to take advantage of that ratio.
Silver come into life, obviously, had a little bit better May. had about a 5.5% up move on Monday. And that did shrink the ratio down to about 97. That's the lowest I saw it here in this cycle.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure yet. 100 to 1, it's a round number and we're humans and we like round numbers. But realistically, we've only been above 100 to 1 now 3 times in history. Mm-hmm. The argument for one of two things or a combination of both to happen, either gold needs to come back down, silver needs to play catch up, or more likely there's a combination of the two. We've been looking at this big gold run up over the last year and a half, followed by this meandering decline back down. I would say the previous high back in September 2022, where we hit about 94.5, because that was a previous high, I'm going to argue that that might be a break point on the way down and might be acting as a little bit of a floor here, but we'll just have to see what happens. I think that's going to depend more on what happens with the other two metals, but there's certainly a lot of momentum that's going to pull them back together. And the last time we broke well above 100, it was only a few months later that it was back down in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So you can have a pretty dramatic swing from bottom to top to bottom when you're looking at the arbitrage between different metals. And man, that's where it makes sense to have, say, a precious metals advisor to work with who helps you navigate and move these things around. Because anytime I can turn 10 ounces into 15 for free, I kind of like that.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that literally happened in that 10-month period of time. And I think that we're facing a similar, maybe a less predictable in terms of its timing. We're in a similar makeup here. That's why you buy silver at a high ratio.
Markets grow, then they expand too far, then they correct back down into somewhere in between. You have two steps forward, one step backwards. You have healthy growth, irrational exuberance, and then you sell off the irrational part. So we had this significant rise in the price of gold, which took us to just scraping 3,500. And we've had this meandering and very uniform decline back down. We came back up to the top of that trading range back on May 23rd. And with the expectation of us declining probably somewhere down to like the 3,050 to 3,075 level, following that declining pattern, lo and behold, here on up Monday of this week, we actually broke above that declining trading range. But moving into the summer months and following on a pretty significant 12-13 month increase in the price of gold already, that has primarily been driven by sovereign bank buying and major private independent global banks buying up gold holdings, literal deliverable gold, 400-ounce delivery bars coming out of the LBMA in London. This is real gold changing hands globally right now. And it's coming from the top down and expecting to see the sell-off continue into the quiet summer months. We're one of 12 steps away from saying that ain't going to happen. So there's a couple of things above here that we're going to need to see. But as somebody who tries to buy gold every 2 weeks, regardless of the price, I'm actually kind of glad I am. Because, yeah, I'd love it if gold comes back another 9 or 10% on a little bit of a pullback here. But there are periods in time when a market just doesn't stop until it's done. And it's not done for a few more years if that ends up happening. So I'm honestly, as somebody who wants gold to inch down a little bit, I'm a little bit nervous after this past week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really hoping for that pullback. But, you know, we should also expect this continued stimulation. If you look at what gold did during Trump's first term, it was up over 60%. You had this initial little pullback after the election and then the reality set in. And, you know, now we've got these increasing concerns. And Rick Rule said, look, to make a long story short, the only way that politically we can honor the nominal value of our obligations is to reduce the purchasing power of the US dollar. And that traditionally has been very good for gold. And we're going to see this continued stair step up in our lifetime.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen $35 gold and now we're $3,335. And that's really not going to change. It's kind of like death and taxes and inflation. They're all locked in together. So over the long term, this is still a beautiful thing. Gold obviously does well in times of uncertainty, but what's driving the uncertainty right now? I mean, it's coming at us from left and right and above and below, right?
We're surrounded
by it. I mean, it's geopolitics. Mm-hmm. We should see a seasonal downturn, except like Monday, there's a geopolitical tension added into the mix. You know, Hegseth now saying China's preparing to use military force in Asia. So that's on top of Israel and Gaza and Iran enriching its uranium and the Ukrainian-Russian conflict and all that. But it's not just geopolitics. It's these economic policy shifts. It's the global trading system redesign. It's domestic manufacturing getting more expensive. It's the political division. It's the inflation. All of those are causing uncertainty and certainly putting wind in the sail of the gold price. And the white metals aren't going to respond identically all the time. They're going to act like more of an industrial metal at times. But that's why, you know, keep short accounts with us and we'll tell you. What do we see happening here, not only over the summer, but in the coming years with the precious metals?
Well, and I see a third year in a row of a shortfall in supply for platinum and palladium and silver. But I can tell you, 3 years ago it was a 750,000 ounce shortfall, more demand than there was availability in platinum and palladium. Last year it was over 600,000 ounces. This year it's predicted to be 500,000 ounces. And China is stepping up their demand for platinum and palladium. So that's why it's going higher.
So that's going to do it this week for Golden Rule Radio. As always, we appreciate you stopping by. If you liked what you heard, encourage you to head on over to our website at mcalvaney.com. That's MCALVANY.com. You can also always give us a call if you'd like to discuss your personal portfolio with one of the advisors here at McIlvaney Precious Metals. We can be reached at 1-800-525-9556. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.